Matthew 1:4. Be careful. Do not do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by men. I tell you the truth. They have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, ho, ho, ho! What have we here?
Hey, mister, are you Santa Claus?
Well, that's what some people call me. Actually, that's my name in Dutch, Sinterklaas, or Santa Claus. But my real name is Nicholas. Nicholas, a servant of Jesus and the Bishop of Myra. Well, actually, Myra is a long, long way from the North Pole. Myra is a Mediterranean seaport town. It's on the southern coast of what we called Asia Minor, what you would know nowadays as the country of Turkey.
Wow, how did you get from being a bishop in Turkey to a guy who delivers gifts?
Well, it's a long, long story, but would you like to hear some of it?
Sure.
What's your name, by the way?
John.
John. That is a good Christian name. Do you know, the bishop who came before me in Myra was named John.
How did you get to take his place?
Well, Bishop John had just died, and so all of the other bishops came together to choose his successor. And there must have been a lot of good candidates because it took them a really, really long time. They spent days and days. They were praying together. They were talking it over, and they just couldn't decide. But finally, the oldest bishop, the senior bishop, he had a vision in the middle of the night. And in his vision, the Lord told him that the first person by the name of Nicholas to walk through the doors of the church the next morning should be the bishop. And guess who the first Nicholas to walk into the church the next day was?
It must have been you.
Well, that's right. I had just been in the Holy Land on a pilgrimage, and I stopped by Myra on the way back to my hometown, which was called Patara, and just like I always did, went to church at the beginning of the day for the service of morning prayers. I walk in the door, the bishop meets me there, he asked me my name, and as soon as I told him it was Nicholas, he immediately told me that God had chosen me to be the next bishop of Myra. Well, needless to say, it was quite a shock, especially since I was only 28 years old.
Wow, you're lucky you went to church that day.
Well, I like to think that God had something to do with it, but besides that, in those days, being a bishop wasn't necessarily a very lucky job to have. You have to remember, I was living just 300 years after Jesus was born, and so the Roman Empire was still in control, and a lot of Romans, they didn't like Christians very much. They persecuted us because we didn't worship their gods, we didn't worship their emperor, and guess who bore the brunt of that Roman persecution?
I don't know.
Well, in a lot of cases, it was the bishops. See, the way they tried to destroy the church was by going after the bishops first. And so, you know, after a little while after I became the bishop, there was this emperor named Diocletian. And he just declared out and out war on Christianity. He arrested me and a lot of my brother bishops. He threw us into prisons where the conditions were absolutely awful. We were beaten. We were tortured. It's a wonder I even survived. But those Christians back there in Myra, they were praying for us. And fortunately, after a little while, the situation was reversed.
So what happened?
Well, God answered our prayers. And after about 5 years, God brought a new emperor named Constantine to power. And he wasn't anything like the old emperor. As a matter of fact, on the eve before a really big and important battle, Constantine had seen a vision that persuaded him to become a Christian. And so as soon as he took charge, he let all of the persecuted Christians out of prison. He announced that actually Christianity would be a legal religion in the Roman Empire. And you know, since it was his religion, it almost became like an official religion of the empire.
Wow, that must have made your job a lot easier.
Well, in some ways it did, but it actually just changed the way that the church was being attacked. You see, now, instead of being attacked from the outside, we started being attacked from the inside. You know, one of the important jobs, in fact, probably the most important job of a bishop, was to maintain the purity of the faith, to make sure that what the church was teaching and what it was passing along to younger generations like yourself was the true faith that we had inherited from the apostles. But there was a bishop down in Alexandria, Egypt, who wasn't doing that. His name was Arius, and he was actually teaching people that Jesus wasn't God. He said Jesus was kind of a lesser sort of God, the first creature that God made.
That's wrong. That's not what my minister says.
Well, you know, the reason that you have learned the truth about Jesus was in no small measure due to a meeting that the Emperor Constantine organized. You see, Constantine realized that the issue of who Jesus was far too important for the church to be divided over. And so he called together all the bishops of the church. He summoned us to a place called Nicaea. And, it was really a powerful, moving scene. I'll never forget it. Most of us who were there, who were bishops, we had survived that period of terrible persecution. So we were some sight to behold. We came in and most of us, we were scarred and disfigured from being beaten and tortured. And do you know what Emperor Constantine did? I mean, he met us there. He got down on his knees. He kissed our wounds. Imagine that. But of course, that wasn't the most important reason that we were there. The real reason that we were there was to talk about Jesus and to really come to some agreement about who Jesus was. Well, they let Arius and the people who agreed with him, they let them stand up and make their case and present their ideas. And I was sitting there listening, and I was becoming more and more incensed. At one point, Arius was up there spouting off all of his heresy, and I finally couldn't take it anymore. I just got up and bam, I clobbered him.
In my school, you'd get suspended for that.
Well, I did get in a little bit of trouble. In fact, some of my fellow bishops weren't sure I should continue to be a bishop after that. But we finally straightened things out. And we finally came to an agreement, and we adopted a great statement that's come to be known as the Nicene Creed. And it really didn't leave any room for doubt over what Christians believe about Jesus. It said that Jesus is God of God, light of light, very God of very God, begotten, not made. That put the issue to rest once and for all.
Well, that's all very interesting, but I'm still pretty confused. You don't sound anything like the Santa Claus I've always heard about. How did you start going around giving presents?
Well, actually, that practice of going around giving presents, you know, it's directly related to what we've been talking about. Because, you see, if Jesus is who he said he was and who the church confesses him to be, God himself, then we have to follow his example. We have to take what he told us to do very, very seriously. And you know, the one thing that Jesus said that I could just never get out of my head was what he told that rich young ruler when he told him to take everything he had and give it to the poor. Do you remember that story? The rich young ruler, give everything you have to the poor. I mean, I could just never get that out of my mind. And I guess the reason that it left such a big impression on me was because at one point in my life, I was like that rich young ruler. You know, I was really blessed in the kind of family that I grew up in. I was an only child raised by two wonderful, godly Christian parents. They taught me about the Lord, and because they had a lot of wealth, they were able to give me the best education I possibly could have gotten. But then something very sad happened. When I was 16 years old, there was an epidemic in our area. The Lord called both of my parents home to be with himself. So as the only child, I inherited all of their wealth. Now, my parents had always been very generous and taught me to help others. But at that point in time, I just felt as though Jesus was calling me to give away all of my wealth to help the poor and the needy.
Really? How exactly did you do that?
Well, did you ever see a little bag of gold coins like this?
I get some like that in my stocking every year.
Did you ever hear the story behind these little bags of gold coins and why children get them in their stockings?
No. Could you tell me?
Absolutely. You see, it all started like this. In my hometown, the place where I grew up, Patara, there was this guy who, he had been very, very well off and well to do, but somehow or another, he had become a poor person. He had suddenly found himself in poverty. As it turns out, he had three beautiful daughters, and they had reached the age where they were old enough to be married. But in those days, in order for a girl to be married, her father had to be able to provide a dowry.
What's a dowry?
Well, a dowry is the money that the bride's father gives to the groom so that he'll be able to take care of her. Now, it seems like kind of a silly practice today, but that was the custom in those days. And if the bride's father couldn't afford a dowry, she couldn't get married. And that would mean that she would go on to have just a miserable, miserable life. She might end up as somebody's slave. And so this poor father with the three daughters, he was absolutely distraught. He was beside himself worrying about what was going to happen to his daughters. And the Lord just laid a real burden on my heart for this family. I knew that I had enough money to help them. But there was a problem. You see, this father, he was a proud individual. He didn't want to be a charity case. He never would have accepted the money if I had just walked up and tried to give it to him. And so I just thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. And finally, I came up with an idea. I took gold coins and I put them in three little sacks like this. And then late at night, when everybody would be in bed, I snuck over to their house and I threw those sacks of gold coins through the window of the bedroom where the girls would be sleeping. Now, some people say that they actually landed in stockings they had hung up to dry by the fireplace. I can't be sure of that because obviously I was outside. All I know is the next morning when they found those sacks of coins, they were amazed. They thought a miracle had happened. And in a sense, it had. Well, it wasn't long before those three girls were married off, and they went on to have long and happy marriages.
So that's how you started going to houses in the middle of the night to deliver gifts.
Well, that's how it started. And I actually did, you know, a lot of things like that. Whenever the Lord brought needs to my attention, laid somebody on my heart, but just like I did with those daughters, I always tried to help people quietly and not to draw attention. I always remembered that other saying of Jesus about doing your good deeds in secret and anonymously. And so that's what I always tried to do. Well, the Lord called me from my life in Myra on the 6th of December. And it seems like people just continue to remember me on that date. And presents started appearing on that day. And people said, well, it must be St. Nicholas. Who's coming to do that? And the practice just kept spreading and spreading.
So is it really you, or is it just someone pretending to be you?
Well, I don't think that's the important point. The important thing is that my spirit lives on whenever people are prompted to give in order to meet the needs of others. So I hope you'll remember. Actually, you think you can remember two important things?
Sure.
Well, first of all, just remember that the real focus of my giving was always on people who were poor and needy. You know, it's a wonderful thing to give gifts to your family and your friends, but the gifts that are given in my spirit are the ones that are given to people who are less fortunate.
I always heard that you give presents to good children and coal to children who are bad.
You know what? I can't understand where that crazy idea came from, because that has nothing to do with the way that I operated. My goal was always to help people in need and to do it quietly and anonymously without drawing any attention. And so whenever somebody gives to meet the needs of another person in that way, then they are operating in my spirit. That's the first thing that I hope you remember. But there is a second thing that is just as important, in fact, even more important. The second thing that I hope you will always remember is that it was always about Jesus. It was because of Jesus that I gave gifts to people. It was because of what I believed about Jesus and what Jesus had taught us to do. And so, really, I would never, ever want the focus to be on me rather than on Jesus. When people are celebrating the coming of Jesus and celebrating the great mystery of the incarnation, if they're focusing on me more than they're focusing on Jesus, they've got it all wrong. They don't understand anything about who I am and what I was about. And so, John, the things I want you to remember are, keep focusing on Jesus and give to others the way he would want us to give. Well, it's been great talking to you, John. You seem like a very bright and a very fine young man.
It's been nice talking with you, too. Thank you for telling me your story.